Welcome back into Locked On Knicks, and we are back with Matt Miranda of Posting and Toasting Alex to get into two hypotheticals from the 90s, and we'll round up. We'll call it the 2000s.
Yeah, we got two big ones. There wasn't too much to talk about in the 2000s. It didn't involve trading away draft picks. So we, as you said, we rounded up. And first, though, we take on the age-old Knicks fan question of what if Charles Smith had finished the layup and the Knicks had managed to beat the Bulls in 1993? Pretty poignant with The Last Dance running right now and the Knicks having just been a star of one of the episodes just the other week. And then we talk about what if Patrick Ewing didn't get hurt in the 1999 finals run, which we sort of touched on with Mark Berman in our episode previously. But we take a deep dive into that and whether Patrick Ewing could have potentially swung the course of that Spurs series for the Knicks. So we get into that next on Locked On Knicks.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
This is all rebound, back up, off the glass, it's good! RJ brings the Knicks to the room.
Milikina.
What he does is contagious.
Robinson with a catch and slam. Across the lane, Knox fouls from behind, count it, and one to Trier. Trier drives down.
Becomes infectious.
Anyway, all right, are we ready to move on to our next one?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. So, Matt, I know this one is big to you and to anyone that grew up in the 90s and grew up with those Knicks teams. And our question here is, what if Charles Smith finished the layup and the Knicks managed to beat the Bulls in the 93 postseason? Which, refresh my memory, at that time, was that game five? That was game five,
game
correct?
Five.
And that would have sent them back home for game six with a 3-2.
No, sent them to Chicago up 3-2.
Sent them to Chicago. Oh, that's right, because the Knicks had home court in that year. So, yeah, to walk me through this one, because I know that you've pondered this moment probably more than I have.
I pondered it entirely too much. So I'm going to avoid the darkest timeline, which would be that they win game five, but then lose six and seven, which was entirely possible. I'm interested in this one, especially, I think, in three different ways. One is, if the Knicks win, they go on to the finals, they play Phoenix, who they matched up, I thought, well with, and let's say they win, and they win the title. I can't imagine how different a lot of things play out over time. One, and I'm acknowledging from the start all my biases as a 90s Knicks fan, but at the time, there was no consensus that Patrick Ewing was beneath Hakeem Olajuwon or David Robinson. By the time they all retired, Olajuwon had two rings, and Robinson had two because of Tim Duncan, and Ewing had zero. And now if you ask almost anybody, Patrick Ewing is comfortably below Olajuwon and below David Robinson. But I'm very curious if he had won in 93, how his legacy would have looked differently in retrospect. I'm very curious how, I mean, John Starks would have his number retired if they had won in 90. Charles Oakley would probably still be fighting with Dolan, but his number would probably be retired too. But I'm also curious, and then there's the question of, like, if they win, it's hard to imagine them messing up the negotiation with Pat Riley a year later, 2 years later, if he wants to stay, if he's the guy who came in and brought you to a title. If Riley is able to work out a deal and stay, and Riley becomes with New York what he eventually became with Miami, like, God knows where we're sitting today as a franchise. So just on that level, it's interesting. What if they win? It's also interesting to me, if they had lost to the Suns, would that have hurt worse? Because there is a certain, I think, historical comfort in the narrative of, well, okay, they didn't win, but they didn't beat Jordan. So, you know, nobody beat Jordan. Fine. And I think that's reductive, but, like, he's in very good company for people who didn't beat Michael Jordan. But if the Knicks had gotten to the finals and they had lost to Phoenix and they had lost to Charles Barkley, like, is it possible that that would hurt more over time? Because Charles Barkley is not Michael Jordan. He's great, but I don't think anybody ever looked at Charles Barkley and thought, like, well, you just can't beat that guy. Would it hurt fans differently if the Knicks had gone on one more round and then lost? And then the part that especially now, I think, with all the Last Dance stuff going on, but it interested me even then, is what happens to Chicago if they lose? Because it's hard to imagine Michael Jordan walking away from the game after losing in the Eastern Conference Finals to his, at the time, biggest rival. Like, if Jordan walks away, how is his reputation now changed? Because he's the greatest competitor. He's the greatest. He lives, breathes, and eats to win. If he leaves after losing, do we still have that stake? Because his image was already starting to get kind of damaged. If he doesn't leave, because he can't, because he feels like, I'm not leaving on a loss. I've got to come back. How does that change all of history? Because now you don't have a 2-year gap where Michael Jordan is basically gone. If Ewing is the champ and Jordan is still around, does Olajuwon dominate the league for 2 years? And if he doesn't, then how does that change our historical rankings of things? I really think that one stupid, frustrating moment had such far-reaching results for so many different people.
Yeah, Matt, I was wondering if this is, I guess, taking it a little bit of a different direction, but just in our actual timeline, like, what gave the Knicks a chance against those Bulls teams? Because I go back and look at the rosters, and I know, just listening to a lot of the conversation, even from national media this week, and I think you were alluding to it a little bit earlier in the podcast, there was the idea that, like, those Knicks teams maybe just weren't that talented around Ewing. And I mean, you can even argue in 93, like, did the Bulls have the two best players on the court between Jordan and Pippen, and was Ewing third in that pecking order? And their supporting cast, like, just again, you look at everyone in a vacuum, and I'd say, okay, like, I don't think the Knicks had, like, an overwhelming advantage when you look at the role players and when you look at the bench. Like, what actually gave the Knicks a chance to compete in those series and theoretically win them? Because on paper, I mean, I just look at it, and obviously I don't have the context of living through it, but on paper, it seems like the Knicks shouldn't have had a chance to even keep the series close, and time again, they did.
A couple of factors. One was, Ewing was definitely the second best player in the series. Unfortunately, he did not tend to outplay Jordan, but he did outplay Jordan from time to time, and he usually played well enough against Chicago that he was one of the players at the time in the league that gave the Bulls the most trouble. The Bulls' biggest problem was with, like, very talented big men, and the Knicks had one. Secondly, John Starks played Jordan as well as anybody else did on both ends, particularly defensively. If you go back to that 93 series and you watch game one, and especially game two, late second half of game one and game two, Starks is right on Jordan. He's blocking, so he even blocks a couple of his fadeaways. Starks played him as well as anybody did, and Starks occasionally would couple that with, you know, a 25-point outburst. And the Bulls were favored for good reason, but the Bulls were not so talented after their, like, they were top heavy. But if Starks could remotely approximate what Pippen did, and Ewing, you know, we had a game where Ewing scored 25 and Jordan scored 50. There's nothing you can do. But Jordan had a number of games in those years where he'd be 9 of 28 or 11 of 27. And Mason would, you know, have a night against Pippen. And it was the defense. That's the only reason. The reason the Knicks were able to play them so tough was they played Jordan better than anybody else did. They often had a good approach for Pippen, which worked not as well when it was Smith, but when it was Xavier McDaniel in 92 or Mason in 93, they tended to handle him pretty well. And really, that was it. They were so good defensively that they could pull the Bulls down a bit. But the problem the Knicks had always was they went into enormous droughts and nobody else could score besides Ewing. And if he happened to be off also, you're out of luck.
This is an interesting thing that I just thought of while we were having the discussion of the actual on-court product. I'm kind of curious if So if Charles Smith finishes the layup, if the Knicks win one of games 6 or 7 and make it to the finals, beat Charles Barkley and win the championship, I'm curious if that makes it more or less likely that Jordan would have actually considered them in 1996 free agency. I actually just saw a story about this like yesterday, like within this week, because of everything going on with The Last Dance. Everybody's talking, you know, various different people that knew Michael Jordan or whatever are coming out to give their stories and everything. And his agent, David Falk, came out and said, you know, I think I think he's probably playing it up a little bit now, but he's like, there wasn't really a shot that he was going to go to the Knicks. We just kind of lined them up as a contingency plan in case things fell through with Chicago. But like looking at the terms of the deal, like it's kind of ridiculous that it was almost allowed to happen if it would have. Apparently the Knicks were going to, because of their stake in Cablevision at the time, the same company owned like Sheraton hotels and stuff. And they were prepared to give Jordan like a $12 million deal, but then also like $20 million under the table in endorsement deals with Sheraton and like to be like their spokesperson or whatever, which apparently the league knew about and was ready to turn a blind eye to. So
that's amazing.
But anyway, I mean, I'm just curious, like if the Knicks won that title, does it, you know, Matt, you brought up a good point of, does Jordan even step away from the game then, or does he come back because he feels like he didn't complete his mission of getting that three-peat, which like I think we saw just this past weekend in Last Dance. It was like, it was a pretty big deal to him, I think, to get that three-peat and to put himself above Magic and Bird. But then like, does he actually consider the Knicks? Do we run into almost like a Kevin Durant situation where he might have actually been okay with coming to New York, particularly because he and Ewing shared representation? Like, could something have come together that way? I mean, I don't know. It's interesting to think about for sure. A quick reminder, today's show is brought to you by Built Bar. Built Bar is, quite frankly, the best tasting protein bar ever. E-V-E-R, ever. I've been eating them pretty much nonstop for the last week and change. I eat them sometimes before a workout, sometimes after my workout, sometimes both. And I've tried a number of flavors now. They taste like kind of like a chewy candy bar. The best way I can think of to describe it is like a denser Three Musketeers, or like if you had $100,000 without the Rice Krispies in it, that kind of thing, like sort of like caramely consistency. You got to taste it to believe it, basically. It's chewy. It's not chalky, I can tell you that much. And it does not taste like it's just 90% fillers like some of the other bigger brands out there. Another good thing is that all the ingredients are all natural, and you don't need a periodic table to figure out what you're eating in your protein bar, which is great. Every bar is covered with 100% natural chocolate on the outside, so you get a nice little chocolatey finish on every single one of them. And the flavors are fantastic. So far, I've tried raspberry chocolate, which was great. I tried peanut butter chocolate, which was really great. I had mint chocolate, which I was not sure what to expect from, but might actually be my favorite flavor now. And banana nut bread, which, again, totally unexpected, but was really fantastic and had actual chunks of nuts in it. Tasted just like a chewier banana bread, basically. So all the flavors are fantastic. They have 8 flavors with nuts and 8 nut-free flavors for those of you with allergies that are prepared in a completely nut-free facility. And they're fantastic for you as well. Each one has anywhere from 15 to 20 grams of protein and have low, low calories, ranging as low as about 110 and only as high as about 170 on the high end. So you're not pumping a ton of calories into your body after your workout when really all you're trying to do is just get protein to rebuild those muscles. So if you are interested in Built Bar, head to builtbar.com and use promo code LOCKEDON and you will get $10 off your first order. That's promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off at builtbar.com. That's builtbar.com. And you can put together your own box there or select a flavor that you think. If you want flavor recommendations, feel free to hit me up on Twitter or whatever. I'd be happy to help you build your box. But again, go to builtbar.com and use promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off your first order.
Would the issue have been, though, like the whole thing that we're seeing in The Last Dance where he seemed like he genuinely didn't want to play for anyone other than Phil?
Well, do you think that if it came down to it that he couldn't say to the Knicks, like, I want Phil Jackson, and they would be like, we'll pay everything to get Phil Jackson for you. We don't care. Like, we'll pay. I think even back then, the Knicks would have been willing to pay whatever to any coach if they could get freaking Michael Jordan. I mean, they were already working out $20 million side deals with hotel chains to get him to come to New York. So
that's nuts. Who did this?
And also,
go ahead, Matt.
If they win, you know, under Smith, and that makes them more appealing, and now Jordan's considering them in 96. I think if Michael Jordan felt like he was going to leave the Bulls, he would leave the Bulls to play for Pat Riley in New York. Like, he wasn't coming to play for – we're not talking Don Nelson anymore. Like, if they win it in 93, Pat Riley's still going to be there. If Pat Riley is still there, I could see Michael Jordan playing for Pat Riley definitely.
Yeah, especially as – I mean, Riley would have had every bit as much of a championship pedigree then too. You know, because he had he had his coaching stint with the Lakers, and then, you know, to go to the Knicks and then win a title there. I mean, I think at that point, yeah, he would have definitely been just as appealing of a coach to play for. Like, probably, arguably the most appealing coach to play for at that point if he had won the title in 93. Maybe even more so than Phil Jackson, even for as much as Michael loved Phil Jackson. So, it's very interesting. I don't know. I wonder almost if it would drive Michael further away from potentially considering the Knicks if they had been the team that screwed up his three-peat, just because he's like a petty motherfucker, you know. But like, yeah. I don't know. Maybe it would have had the opposite effect, and he would have said, "Well, you know, maybe Michael Jordan, for all the grandstanding he does now about it, would have had a if you can't beat him, join him moment, and just gone ahead and done it and created" potentially a Knicks dynasty, you know, through the end of the 90s.
How much crap would that have saved future generations if Jordan had gone and left to a team that, like, how much easier would LeBron's life be and Durant's life and all these other people if Jordan had already done it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, because Jordan is held up as the benchmark of, like, Jordan and now Kobe. And then you could say, like, Tim Duncan, Dirk also, you know, like there's a number of guys that played in that general time frame where they played just for one team. And that's held as part of their legacy, like of like, well, he only stayed with one team. But like Jordan, it would have been different because he's legitimately like the best, probably the best player that's ever stepped on an NBA court. And, you know, Phil, if he had done that, yeah, you're right. That would have the way that we perceived the decision in 2010, and then Durant's Players Tribune decision, it just would have been so different, I think, for sure. All right, what do we think? Do we want to move to our next item here?
Yeah, let's keep it going.
Okay, so our next one is, and this is our so far we've done the 70s and before the 70s, we've done the 80s. And then we just did the 90s. This one technically is still in the 90s, but we're going to call it our 2000s entry because the only real things that you can bring up in the 2000s, and we thought about some of them, and maybe, I don't know, I don't even know if they're worth discussing because I feel like it's already been sort of fleshed out a number of times in various different places. But the only ones you can really come up with during the 2000s are like, what if Isaiah Thomas didn't trade this, that, or the other draft pick? And what would it have been like if they played for the Knicks? So, like, for example, what if the Eddie Curry – one that we tossed around a little bit was, what if the Eddie Curry trade never happened and the Knicks managed to get Joakim Noah and LaMarcus Aldridge on the team? And that's – it's interesting to think about, but I feel like people have discussed that quite a bit. So, instead, we're going to do one from the 99 finals run. And this one – this is one that I started thinking about when we did our – so, first, when we did our show with – Berman about the 99 team, and then when MSG reran the 99 playoffs to sort of, and you know, gave that little nostalgia boost there. And the thought here is, what if Patrick Ewing didn't get hurt in 99 and the Knicks had him against the Spurs that year? And this one, I think this one is interesting, because if you talk to most people now that were, you know, into the team at the time and whatever, and some people say this, you know, as like a hindsight thing, but a lot of people now look back and say like, oh, it was secretly a good thing that Patrick Ewing got hurt, because he was holding back the style of play that they wanted. And, you know, they wanted to be this running team with Sprewell and Houston and Camby and, you know, LJ to an extent. And, you know, Ewing was like this big plotting big man that, you know, couldn't quite fit it. But then to me, when I look at it, I look at, okay, they made their run and they managed, you know, Patrick got hurt in the Eastern Conference Finals. And they still managed to close that out against Indy and get to the finals. But if they had Patrick in the finals, I think that could have potentially swung that series, or at least made it more competitive, make it not a 5-game series, maybe a 6 or 7 game series, because they basically went up against San Antonio and got completely outclassed by a team with, you know, a twin tower system of Tim Duncan and David Robinson trying to play, you know, Marcus Camby and Larry Johnson, who just, you know, in that particular time of big dominated basketball, just couldn't keep up with those two guys. And that ultimately was part of what killed the Knicks in that series. So, Matt, what are your thoughts? You know, you were a fan of the team and probably remember, I've said a number of times on this show, that was the first team that got me into the Knicks. So I, you know, I didn't remember quite as many intimate details about it before rewatching it, but what did you think at the time? And then what do you think now with the passage of time about like when the Knicks lost Ewing, and then what if they'd been able to get him, or what if they had had him still against San Antonio?
So I have thought now for about 21 years that the Ewing is holding the team back argument was incredibly stupid then, and has only grown more stupid as time has gone on. In that postseason, he went down at the end of game 2 against Indiana. The Knicks in that playoffs to that point were 8-3 when Ewing was playing. If you go back to the Miami series, which, you know, came down to the last shot, if you look at that, the numbers from that series, and you didn't just have to see numbers, but if you didn't get to watch it live, the only Knick who played major minutes and who had a positive rating was Patrick Ewing. Sprewell was dead even. Houston was slightly under. Larry Johnson was slightly under. Camby had a big split, but he was off the bench mostly. Ewing in that series played as well as anyone else on the Knicks did and had to, because he was dealing with Alonzo Mourning, who was at that point part of it still like dangerous, but Mourning was their best player. The Knicks don't get out of that first round if Patrick Ewing isn't there doing what he's doing. Next round, they killed Atlanta. It wasn't really competitive, but still, he was going up against a younger Mutombo. I thought he outplayed Mutombo. Not like, you know, Mutombo was Olajuwon or something, but still. And then they get to the Indiana series. They're 8-3 when Ewing goes down. And then the rest of that postseason, they're 4-5. They didn't lose because Ewing was holding them back. And I think, kind of to what you were saying, Alex, I think definitely if he gets to the finals, I think it's significantly different, because without Ewing, remember, game 5 is pretty much up for grabs until the last minute when Avery Johnson hits his baseline jumper to put the Spurs up, I think 4 in the last minute. The Knicks were very close to getting that series back to San Antonio without Patrick Ewing, if they had Ewing there. And you could at least have, okay, so you have Ewing on Robinson, probably expect them to cancel each other out. Now you can have Camby defending Duncan, and you can also waste some fouls with Kurt Thomas and Chris Dudley and maybe LJ, or maybe you resuscitate Herb Williams for a few minutes. But if Ewing is healthy, I think it changes completely the outcome of the season. And not only does it change, they'd probably still lose. I think they would still lose. But now the narrative coming out of 1999 is not, wow, like, look at how close we came, and I think that guy is holding us back. Now the narrative, I think, more is like, wow, like, what a great run, and, you know, what a wonderful story, and we'll bring our guys back, and we'll see, you know, let's see how it goes again. But I think the way that 99 ended laid the groundwork for how Ewing's dismissal from the organization ultimately went, because now, and it was, you know, it cuts both ways. Like, the team wronged him. He also was, like, said things publicly about how maybe he would sign with Miami, which was not a thing that Patrick Ewing was supposed to say in 2000. And I think enough then was laid out that, okay, the forces that wanted to move him had the momentum to move him. If they didn't have that momentum, not only do you have a better 99 season and possibly a better 2000, but I think then the Patrick Ewing trade doesn't happen. I think things end differently. And if that trade doesn't happen, who knows? I mean, that was just a stupid trade. Whatever you think of Ewing, it wasn't a good trade. It didn't get the Knicks back anything that was going to help them long term. So I think it makes for a better finals in 99. I think it paves the way for a more amiable closing chapter between Ewing and the organization. I think his legacy would look better because now I think Patrick Ewing is a little bit similar to Phil Simms as the guy who everybody remembers, like, for one magical season. And then there's another season where he was there for most of it, but then he wasn't at the end. I wish he had been there for it. I think he would have held his own in the finals. I think he would have shown a lot of people, like, the value that he still had. And I think it would have been a much, much more interesting series. And I think it would have been a lot tighter for a Spurs team that was trying to win for the first time.
Yeah, I don't have anything to add to it. That was a great summary, Matt. Any final notes on that, Alex?
No, I can't really think of too much else either. I mean, that's pretty much where my thoughts went with this one, is basically I think that people look at it because they want to look at it that way and say, well, that was the emergence of the other guys and, you know, whatever. But I don't know how you could possibly look back at that Spurs series and say, like, yeah, having Patrick Ewing, even in the state that he was in for most of the playoffs, like, to your point, Matt, like, he was injured for most of the playoffs. Like, what finally was the straw that broke the camel's back was that his Achilles, like, got mostly torn after just being, yeah, you know, irritating him for the whole playoffs. It finally, like, almost snapped, and they caught it in time and said, okay, you know, your Achilles tendon is getting ready to snap here. So if you play, you know, another minute, there's a chance it might just pop. But, you know, even at the diminished state that he was in, playing through pain and everything, prior to when he got injured, I think he would have been a huge help in that series. And, you know, to your point, maybe I don't know if it necessarily would have been likely, but there's a chance they could have beaten the Spurs. Certainly a better chance than what it was, which was basically none. You know, you watched like 5 minutes of that series and you were like, okay, yeah, this is like one team on one tier and another team on another tier. And you know, with the extra big man to even out that matchup, maybe it could have gone differently.
All right, guys, that's it for this edition of Locked on Knicks. We will be back one more time with Matt. Two more hypotheticals. What if the Knicks didn't amnesty Chauncey Billups to make room for Tyson Chandler? That's a fun conversation that goes on for a little longer than I even anticipated. Alex, you did a great job mapping out all the ways that could have gone. And then we got a bonus for you. What if the Knicks had called Carmelo Anthony's bluff? They let him go to the Nets, and then they end up with D. Will instead. How that would have changed Knicks history. But Alex, maybe the greatest hypothetical at all, what if we just went back to the 70s and given the Knicks Built Bars? Do they win 5 titles? Do they win 10? I think that more than anything else could have changed the course of the New York Knicks timeline.
Yeah, you know, it would have been something like giving them, you know, Nike Zoom Air shoes or something, you know, to be able to jump higher back in those days. Total game changer if they could have had Built Bar. Can you imagine Willis Reed if he had 20 grams of protein and only 170 calories in his post-workout meal? Would have been pretty great. So if you want to be like weird pseudo future, but is it past or is it future, whatever timeline theory you subscribe to, do you want to be like that version of Willis Reed or not? If you do, then make sure to get Built Bar. Go to BuiltBar.com and use promo code LOCKEDON, and you will get $10 off your first order. So again, that's go to builtbar.com. Use promo code Locked On. You will get $10 off your order. And we'll talk to you guys soon to finish up this series. Peace.